Peter B. Collins News and Comment for Thursday, June 5th. Today, it's all about Guantanamo.
We sailed on the ship John B., my grandfather and me. Around Nassau town we did roam, drinking all night, got into a fight. Well, I feel so homesick, I want to go home. So hoist up the John B. sail, see how the mainsail sets. Call for the captain ashore, let me go home. Let me go home.
It's Johnny Cash.
Why don't you let me go home?
He calls that song I Wanna Go Home.
I feel so homesick.
When the Beach Boys did it, it was called the Sloop John B.
The first mate, he got drunk.
And I would love to see the John B. pull up offshore at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and take some of those boys home. Lots to talk about today, and because I spent quite a bit of time putting together in-depth interviews with two experts on different aspects of Guantanamo, whom I'll detail for you in a minute, I have limited time and I want to focus on the firestorm that has been generated this week around the Obama decision to swap five Taliban leaders from Guantanamo for the release of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. And as I've pointed out numerous times, and I mentioned to both of my interview subjects in the in-depth podcast today, it is really painful to see elected leaders who don't utter a peep when Obama shifts the timeline for our withdrawal from Afghanistan by a couple of years, who don't utter a peep when the president asserts the authority to select people to be killed by drone strikes, and yet they want to micromanage retroactively his decision to conduct this swap. And there are many issues that are raised. And first and foremost, people like me and Andy Worthington, the journalist who is our lead interview subject in today's in-depth podcast, which will be released to subscribers a little bit later on, Andy Worthington points out that we have a situation where there's 78 men cleared for release. Those 78 watched this week as five men from Afghanistan, who were Taliban leaders when they were arrested, who have never been cleared for release, and also, of course, never been charged or tried, were nonetheless plucked from their ranks at Guantanamo and sent to Qatar. And this shows the real disparities, the inequities of those who have found themselves at Guantanamo. And it's fascinating in talking to Andy Worthington, the British journalist who has done the most exhaustive coverage of Guantanamo, wrote the book The Guantanamo Files, that profiles virtually every man who has been held there. And he, of course, is aghast that the attention that Guantanamo is getting could ultimately lead to the continuation of the operation of that prison beyond the Obama administration. And so in our conversation with Andy Worthington, we talked quite a bit about the situation there, about the Bergdahl prisoner swap and the hypocrisy of many people who politically supported a swap for Bergdahl until Obama actually did it. And now, because it's an election year, it's all fueled by the domestic politics of the situation. And as Worthington points out, we have an agreement with the nation of Uruguay to accept at least six of the prisoners from Guantanamo who can't be repatriated to their native countries. And one of them is a man named Diab, D-H-I-A-B. He's from Syria. He can't be returned to Syria. But he was cleared for release more than 4 years ago. And he has been on an active hunger strike and is the subject of court proceedings as the government seeks the continuing authority to force feed Diab and his lawyers. We talked to one of them, John Eisenberg, in the second segment of today's in-depth interview podcast. And Eisenberg takes us through the really grisly process of being forcibly extracted from a cell, of being forced to have these tubes inserted and pulled out as often as twice a day, every day. And the Pentagon has defied the orders of Judge Gladys Kessler at the District Court in Washington, D.C., to alleviate the unnecessary, the gratuitous pain that is inflicted on Diab on a daily basis. So, in our in-depth interview, you'll hear these two very well-informed individuals talk about Guantanamo. And a little bit later here, I'm going to bring you some very interesting excerpts from those conversations. First, though, to update the story, President Obama continues to defend his decision to make this swap. And I want to note that both Rachel Maddow and the fake news guy, John Stewart, on television on Wednesday night, did an excellent job of showing us the video footage. And I'll limit my comments to John McCain, but there are others. And in February, I believe the date was February 10th, John McCain gave an interview on camera, essentially berating the Obama administration for not winning the release of Bo Bergdahl. And when asked if he would trade prisoners for Bergdahl, McCain basically says yes. And now, because Obama did it, he's saying, well, I didn't agree to release these people. It's a terrible deal. We've negotiated with terrorists. And so McCain is using all of these Republican talking points. And I really consider this treasonous, because the right wing, as they attack Obama for this, they're making things up. For example, they're saying that these five Taliban leaders who've been released were responsible for killing Americans. There's no evidence of that. And as we talked about with Anand Gopal earlier this week, and Andy Worthington confirms, these five Taliban leaders, the majority of them, were sent into U.S. custody as they were attempting to either surrender or switch sides from the Taliban, which was the authorized government of Afghanistan when we invaded, to either a warlord group or the U.S. side. And so a lot of backstabbing and double dealing sent these men to Guantanamo in the first place. And I'm not saying they're angels or anything like that, but the images that are being ginned up by the right-wing talking points in the American media right now are quite divorced from reality. Now, we also see that the orchestrated official leaks are providing more derogatory information about Sergeant Bergdahl. And I'm going to report this to you just because I think, you know, it's been reported and we should know about it. But I deeply object to the way a classified military report detailing the Army's investigation of the disappearance of Bergdahl in June 2009 has now been leaked to the public. And we can all play Nancy Grace now. We have a little bit of information. It's one-sided. We've never heard Bergdahl's side of the story. And many Americans will reach judgment. Many Americans already have. It doesn't take them, they don't require much evidence to act on a pre-existing bias. So this 35-page report, according to the New York Times, concludes that Bergdahl most likely walked away of his own free will from his outpost late at night. The report criticized lax security and poor discipline in the unit, but it stops short of concluding that there's solid evidence that Bergdahl intended to permanently desert. It also reports, again, this is the official leak, that he had wandered away from assigned posts, like at a training range in California and at the remote outpost in Afghanistan, before he allegedly walked away for the final time. Now, I'm open-minded about this. I don't know if Sergeant Bergdahl did desert. And in the fog of war, given what we put our troops through, I give him the extreme benefit of the doubt. But there are too many who aren't willing to do that. And it's interesting when John McCain takes the lead for the Republicans with his pal Lindsey Graham in trying to spin this up in the darkest possible way. And it reminds me of a story that I was told by Dr. Phil Butler. Phil Butler was shot down. Well, first of all, Phil Butler attended the Naval Academy at the same time as John McCain. And he was shot down over North Vietnam years before John McCain was. Phil Butler was one of the longest-serving prisoners of war during the Vietnam era. And when they were both midshipmen at Annapolis, John McCain, who was senior to Phil Butler, went over the fence, AWOL, just for a few hours, so that they could go out to a bar and have a few drinks. So John McCain is no saint when it comes to bending or breaking the rules of the military. Now, this report goes on to say that there is no mention of Sergeant Bergdahl having left behind a letter that his colleagues say was there explaining why he was disillusioned and planning to desert. And the people in his hometown of Haley, Idaho, with all this negative Fox News-generated publicity, have decided to cancel the celebration that was set up for his impending return. And I just want to underscore that we now have right-wingers, the same people who call Ed Snowden a traitor, the same people who lined up to denounce Chelsea Manning. These people are intentionally leaking classified information for a political purpose and in a way that will clearly damage the prospects for any kind of a fair trial should Sergeant Bergdahl be brought up on court-martial charges. And so this is quite a controversy. It has eclipsed Benghazi, at least temporarily, as the axe that Republicans want to grind against President Obama. Now, in more authorized sharing of classified information, defense and intelligence officials met with senators and briefed them on Wednesday and explained that they kept the impending swap of Bergdahl for the five Taliban prisoners secret because they feared for his life if the deal became public. Now we're seeing two rationales floated from the White House. One is that Bergdahl's health was deteriorating and that videotapes offered evidence of that, and there has been agreement from members of Congress who've seen those videotapes. The other issue is that if they told Congress that they were going to conduct this swap, the likely political outburst that would follow could compromise the secrecy of the swap, and it could cause the Taliban to kill their prisoner, Sergeant Bergdahl. Now, I think that's a reasonable theory. And I, of course, have not enough information to know if there is evidence to sustain it. But in this whole episode, I give Obama the benefit of the doubt. I don't give him the benefit of the doubt when he claims presidential power to kill people. But when he claims presidential power to free people, well, I guess that's my bias. Senator Angus King, the independent from Maine, said the lawmakers were told that the threat to Bergdahl from the Taliban came from a credible intelligence source. Democratic Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan said that the information made clear that his life was threatened. And so we don't have much more detail about that. And the only tidbit of information we have about the current status of Bergdahl, he's being evaluated at a military hospital in Landstuhl, Germany. And a spokesperson there named Stephen Warren, actually he's at the Pentagon, had limited information. He said, Bergdahl is conversing with medical staff, becoming more engaged in his treatment care plan. He is resting better. And then this murky statement. He is being helped by psychologists who are working with him to regain control of his emotions. Now, that's a very loaded fragment. It immediately suggests that he hasn't been in control of his emotions and they're working to help him. And again, I don't find this information to be terribly useful or transparent. And I beg the media to stop this, you know, the disinformation and misinformation that is being put out, and also stop the speculation and stop the judgment. I know that I am pissing into the wind, but that is my position. So now I want to play for you an excerpt from the in-depth interview with Andy Worthington, the British journalist. And it's interesting because, as you're about to hear, both Worthington and attorney John Eisenberg ended up in our interviews pointing the finger at one man. And his name is Barack Obama. Here's Andy Worthington from my conversation with Andy Worthington.
You know, I think the waiver in the legislation is very, very important. But he won't use it. He's, you know, the only time that he's gone against Congress, however he's done it, has been in the case of these five guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over the next, before his presidency finishes, if he's not going to get support from Congress, I want to see him. And I want to see the American people demand that he does something as the president to get people out of Guantanamo, to make steps towards the closure of that prison. You know, and obviously we will all keep trying to exert that pressure, because he has a legacy, and presidents care about their legacy. And frankly, you know, a big black mark against President Obama, if the prison stays open in the same mess that it is, hey, this is the guy who came into office promising to close this abomination. And you know what? He failed. And all the time he bleated on about how it was Congress's fault. And sure, let's not let Congress off the hook, because lawmakers have behaved appallingly. And we can see now how appallingly they can behave when Guantanamo comes into sight. But, you know, the president has got to do what he said he was going to do, really, or it's going to be a black mark against him in the history book.
There's much more in the full interview with Andy Worthington, which is released to subscribers today at peterbcollins.com. The second portion of the in-depth interview is with attorney John Eisenberg. And as I mentioned, he is handling the case of a man named Diab, a Syrian. Been at Guantanamo 12 years, never charged or tried, cleared for release for more than 4 years, and hunger striking for over a year now. And John Eisenberg gives a lot of information about the legal wrangling that's been underway, about the efforts of the Pentagon to withhold videotapes by playing games about whether they existed or not, at the anguish that Judge Kessler has described she feels, first ordering the Pentagon to stop force-feeding Diab, stop extracting him violently from his cell, and then reluctantly ordering them to resume the force-feeding because she was afraid that the hunger strike would kill him. And unexpectedly, like Andy Worthington, John Eisenberg had this to say about the single individual American who could put a stop to the grueling and obscene behavior of our government and the barbaric way that Diab is being treated. And once again, that single individual is named Barack Obama.
Here's something I don't understand. Who's in charge? If Chuck Hagel is balking at signing off on the release of Guantanamo Bay detainees to Uruguay, as has been reported in the press, and if President Obama is now leaning on him to sign off and let these guys go through Susan Rice, well, who's in charge here? The president, the commander-in-chief, or the secretary of defense? And if Obama cannot control this situation, why is that? And this is the question I ask myself frequently in the past few years, having done a lot of litigation in this field now, Guantanamo Bay and Al Haramain, where it was wiretapping. Is the problem that President Obama is too weak, or is the problem that the Department of Defense and the Pentagon and the intelligence community are too strong, or is it some of both? But I don't understand, and I question over and over again, why doesn't President Obama just step in, take charge, and put out some orders to people to do stuff? Or as he put it in the State of the Union address, let's get it done. Let's get it done. Now, here's where I think that resonates the most with me. The force feeding. The brutal way in which it is being done. Now, he has absolute unfettered power to stop that. He doesn't need Chuck Hagel's sign-off on that. Assuming he feels he needs Hagel to sign off on release, okay. He doesn't need Hagel to sign off on treating these guys humanely. He is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. He can order the government. He could have ordered the government to, after the hearing on May 21st, the authorities at JTF Gitmo at Guantanamo Bay, he could have simply ordered them to accept the compromise that we had proposed, which is, or was, that Mr. Diab be hospitalized, the feeding tube be left in, not removed and reinserted twice a day, and that he not be forcibly removed from his cell during the pendency of this litigation. Obama could simply have ordered that compromise to be accepted.
And the full interview with John Eisenberg, along with the Andy Worthington interview, released to subscribers today at peterbcollins.com. And one of the interesting issues that I discussed with both Worthington and Eisenberg is what has recently surfaced as an open struggle inside the Obama administration about release of Guantanamo prisoners. And I've alluded to this frequently in the past week since it was reported by the New York Times. And that is that the White House, under the signature of National Security Advisor Susan Rice, has sent a stern letter to Hagel at the Pentagon, demanding that he report into the White House every 2 weeks on progress of releasing prisoners from Guantanamo Bay. And that Hagel, who has only released one man in this calendar year, 2014, is cynically delaying a decision, particularly in the case of Diab. Because while the bizarre rules of the Guantanamo legal bar prevent John Eisenberg from actually confirming or denying what we know through the media, the nation of Uruguay has offered a home to Diab, and all that we need is Chuck Hagel's approval for that transfer to take place. And so to imagine that Hagel is comfortable taking his time on a decision, as a man resorts to the only available means to protest his untenable detention, the hunger strike. And Chuck Hagel seems unfazed by all that. So this is fascinating because based on the U.S. model of force-feeding, hunger-striking prisoners at Guantanamo, the government of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel floated a trial balloon that, hey, maybe we should force-feed the Palestinians in our prisons who are hunger-striking. And like the Guantanamo inmates, many of these Palestinians are held indefinitely under Israeli law without charge or trial. And to their credit, the Israeli Doctors Association, the equivalent of the AMA, has refused to permit its members to participate in force feeding of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli prisons. And this highlights the failure of the medical professionals in the military assigned to Guantanamo who have deferred to their commanders and violated their Hippocratic oaths and the ethics of their professions in a broader way. And this is just another black mark on America, that we have soiled ourselves by lowering our standards. And I, for one, will not be silent until we have corrected what I think is one of the most serious aberrations that I've seen the United States get involved in my lifetime. Before I wrap up today, you know, I usually mention a couple of the people who support my podcast through their subscriptions, and today I want to do something different. I would like to ask each of you who has listened to this podcast all the way to this point to support me on Facebook, because Facebook has made some changes to the distribution of posts that I make on what's called my fan page. I have a personal page, and I have a page called Peter B. Collins Show. Now, many of you, hundreds of you, have come over to that page and clicked like. If you haven't, I invite you to do so. And if you have, I invite you to come back to the Peter B. Collins Show page. Go to the button where you clicked like. And after you click like, it becomes a pull-down menu. There's a little tab there. Click on that tab, and one of the options on the pull-down menu says Get Notifications. Click on that. What that means is that you are instructing Facebook to deliver every one of my posts to you. And if you don't do that, what's been happening is that Facebook, in what I see as an effort, a pretty cynical effort to force me to pay to promote posts so that all of the people who like my fan page will see that post, well, they have been distributing my posts to less than 1% of the people who say they like the Peter B. Collins Show page. So I want to thank Carl Howard, a very loyal listener and supporter, the guy who likes me on Facebook more than anybody else and more often than anybody else. He's based in Columbus, Ohio, and yesterday he was kind enough to give me a telephone consultation. He really navigates Facebook very well, and he gets all of my posts because he selected the Get Notifications option. So I would like to try this and invite you to spread the word to like-minded people. You can put up a post on Facebook and share it with your network. But what we need to do here is see if we can get around the effort of Facebook to extract money from people like me in order to communicate with the people who have already declared that they want to receive my posts. So let's try this out and see if we can build a kind of new network on Facebook, because otherwise I will probably stop posting there. If only a handful of people are seeing the posts, it is hardly worth the time it takes me to put it up and the effort to, you know, get all the information accurate and make it look pretty and all that stuff. So that is my request for listeners today, and I thank you for joining me for news and comment. I hope you will express your outrage to your elected leaders about the grisly situation at Guantanamo Bay.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.